Tune it in, check it out, listen up, find out what
Matthew it Brunson is here. Recently I sat down with a couple of the performers from the Placidus Artist Series held at the Placidus Presbyterian Church here in beautiful Placidus, New Mexico. This performance is called Einstein's Violin. The chamber music was performed by Willie Sucre and friends, who, if you know the series, is there on a regular basis, and Tom Shook, a well-known actor and actually the president of the Screen Actors Guild for Albuquerque. As we were setting up the equipment, we got so excited about the interview that it all started long before the cameras and the mics started to record. So we're going to go straight to them now. Didn't want to miss a beat, but it is a little confusing introduction or beginning of the interview. But as I said, we didn't want to miss anything. So here's Willie Sucre and friend discussing Einstein's Violin.
I mean, the way we started in Placidus 30 years ago, I wasn't here. For me, it's my 28th year.
Okay.
I came 2 years later than the original group. But, you know, to just start from the original group, it was the Helios String Quartet.
The which quartet?
Helios. Helios String Quartet, the original group that came to Placidus.
Isn't that a mathematical or chemistry term, Helios?
Helios is a god, a Greek guy.
I knew it was something more educated than myself would know.
But I believe they came and play a wedding thing, you know, a wedding job, and they did such a good job that some of the people in Placidus decided, why can't we have music all the time in Placidus?
Right.
And that meeting happened very quickly. The next season, they started with two or three concerts, and little by little, it grew to what is today, which I think today is pretty much very well known all over the state. Placidus Artist Series is a predominant organization in terms of music,
yes,
culture, in the state. You know, we have started a lot of the things you see today growing in Albuquerque or, again, around the state.
It's so interesting because, you know, for most things, you need to go into Albuquerque.
Yes.
You know, for dental or medical or whatever, and you
right.
speak to various people, the woman cleaning your teeth or whoever, the shop clerk, and they go, oh yeah, Placidus, that's very nice. Have you ever been there? No, I haven't been there yet. They've lived here 30 years, they haven't been to Placidus.
That's something strange, isn't it? Because there's a lot of people in Placidus that know very well what's going on here, but they haven't been here yet. So we're waiting. The doors are open, you know, and we're waiting for them to come in and join us and see how many wonderful things happens in this church. I think Placidus Presbyterian Church has been an icon in terms of supporting the arts and painters.
It's amazing all the things that this several hundred year old church is responsible for.
Oh, absolutely.
For the cultural growth of Placidus.
Oh, absolutely. I remember the meeting. This was with the meeting with the Helios String Quartet. That was our, what else should we do in Placidus? You know, how could we add the arts in Placidus? And immediately my suggestion was to put paintings, photographs, to invite other forms of art. We had the spoken word before. We had people writing specific pieces for the quartet that had narration and a string quartet.
Right. You know, let me do the intro to the program.
Sure.
Since I should have done it at the beginning, but thank God we can edit things. So this is Conversations with Matthew Brunson on KUPR Radio 99.9 FM here on the high desert of Placidus. I've recently been saying high desert. You can probably tell me. Are we high desert?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay, so I don't have to go back and edit my last three interviews. All right. Today we are speaking about the upcoming concert, which may have been the concert in the past, depending on when you listen to this, at the Placidus Artist Series. Sunday, the concert is Willie Sucre and Friends. Today we're talking to Willie Sucre and Friend.
Yes.
And
Tom Zook, a great actor.
People may not recognize your name, but if they when they see your face, they go, I know that guy. And do you find that to be true?
Well, I don't know. It depends on how I'm dressed, I guess. But I'm from this area, so I know a lot of people.
So do you hang out with, who's that other gentleman, Patrick something, who's, he's on How I Married Your Mother. His family had a restaurant here for years.
Oh, yes.
Do you have, like, a club where you...
No. He's in a different level than I am.
Well, he'll catch up to you eventually.
He's a Hollywood guy now.
He doesn't know what he's missing.
I'm a New Mexico guy.
Yeah. So this, so we're going to talk first about Willy Sucre and how it became Willy Sucre and Friends over coming up on 30 years. Yes. And then, I mean, you started out in Bolivia, in La Paz, learning music, I'll say perfecting your craft, which probably you'll think you never perfect. So how did you come to America?
With a scholarship. I had a string quartet in La Paz, Bolivia. That was actually my first group that we will work every day. We will have programs to work at. We tour all over Bolivia with a quartet. And we had a guest violist playing viola quintets. And she was a violist from New York, graduated from Juilliard. And she was amazed to hear the group. When she came back to the United States, she managed to find us a scholarship to go as a group to go play in Maine with the Hungarian string quartet.
Okay.
Fantastic experience for all of us. It was the first time that we were all out of the country, out of Bolivia, as musicians, and finding ourselves in this wonderful atmosphere of new ideas, new sounds, new composers, everybody involved in music. We were so excited.
So now, Bolivia, especially La Paz, back when you were growing up,
yes,
it was more of a two-class society, not uncommon in that part of the world at that time. Where were you? I mean, I would think you would have to have some kind of privilege if you're going to have the opportunity to study music.
I did feel privileged in a way. But the conservatory, it was, of course, it was free to everybody. I felt privileged to have the opportunity to have a school to go to.
But that must have been, mom or dad must have said, William, you're going to the conservatory.
They loved music. None of them were musicians, but they always had the radio station and the classical station. If they bought a recording, it was going to be classical music, you know. So they were always very involved. And since I was a child,
and viola was your first instrument?
Violin.
Okay.
Violin.
Because you'd have to be very precocious at a young age to go, I want to play viola. Like, not only what is that?
But you know, in Bolivia, there weren't even small violins. You know how you have full size, half size, quarter size. Well, you couldn't find quarter size violins.
Didn't have Amazon back then.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, it took me 6 months to get a violin a quarter size from Argentina. When I got that, I was so happy because everything fit.
Certainly.
You know? But that was the circumstances. There were difficulties in terms of finding good music, for example. If I wanted to play a Beethoven string quartet, we had to order the music, and that took months.
Certainly.
To get it. So there were some difficulties.
There's no PDF out there in the internet
exactly.
to download.
Exactly. I mean, you're very careful how you use your strings, because if you break one,
yes.
it will take a long time to get another one. You know, so there were all those complications in it. But within that, the atmosphere was so musical, so joyful in a way, and it was a good setup. That's where my chamber music, I guess energy, you can call it, started.
Right.
The conservatory will always have, for example, the students who did composition, they were obligated to compose something for the rest of the conservatory. So you had duets, you had trios, you had quartets, you had all of these things, and it was always new music. It was just composed. You know, so discovering all of that, there were so many interesting conversations. The composer was right there, you know, indicating what he wanted. Now you got to find your technique to imitate what he wanted. All of that kind of atmosphere made me simply love chamber music.
Did you have a situation, and this might be true for yourself acting, where the writer is there, or the composer, and they and you're practicing, and they go, "No, no, 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 you don't get it. This is that ever happened? Either of you?"
Kind of, there's situations like that, I suppose.
Well, I just spent a couple of weeks in India last month touring a one-man show called Einstein, A Stage Portrait, that I've been touring for the last 15 years. And the playwright who wrote the play, he wrote it some 30 years ago, he took the trip with me. So we went together, the actor and the playwright. And it was the first time we'd actually ever worked together. He's seen me do the show a number of times over the years, but he was acting as director on this particular tour. So it was interesting to get his take on some of the technical aspects of the play, you know, lighting and sound and so forth.
15 years later.
Yeah, and he I know the show so well, but he didn't direct me as an actor. He didn't have to tell me where to go and when to go he didn't fill that capacity as a director. He was more kind of showing the picture to the audience, setting the picture with lighting cues and so forth. So it changed a little bit of my movement, but not much. And so that was interesting. It kind of took a load off my shoulders. Now, I didn't have to worry about the technical side of the show.
Certainly.
So that was very enjoyable. But, he saw the show, the first performance of the show, and he came backstage and he said, "I don't see an actor on stage anymore. I see Einstein."
Wow, that's great.
And so that was great to hear that.
Well, I have to second that, by the way. The transformation that he goes to become Einstein, I think is phenomenal.
Acting has always escaped me. I mean, I am a hobby musician, so I understand music and all that. But acting, becoming somebody else, that's just not something I can grasp. Maybe that's my engineering background, that it's too non-paper and pencil.
Yeah. Well, in this particular show that we're doing now, when I first started rehearsing Einstein, A Stage Portrait, I took violin lessons from Willie, and that's how we met about 15 years ago. And he had mentioned back then that he would like to do something with myself as Einstein on stage and his quartet. And so we kind of lost track of each other for a number of years and then reconnected about a year and a half ago and talked about it again and said, "Let's do it." So
right.
He already had dates.
Mm-hmm. Had by the way, dates, comes in tomorrow.
Yeah. By the way, a year from now, we're going to be in Placidas. So that kind of gave us both the incentive to start really.
Certainly.
And for me to start writing the show.
Albert Einstein, from a audience perspective, I would think that would be more difficult than some. There are solo actors who do political people,
sure,
other writers or whatever. And as a person just living through America, I've seen video clips of Roosevelt, mm-hmm, or Mark Twain or the people that who are in one-man shows. I know what Albert Einstein looks like. You always see the picture with his white hair sticking way out.
Sure.
He might be in a black and white silent movie, the Discovery Channel. They show a clip of him when he's doing something, or he has the pipe. I don't know if he has a deep voice, a high voice. I would, as you said, Willie, the writer said, "I don't see an actor anymore. I see Einstein." I don't know what to expect.
Well, that's the challenge when you do a very well-known historical figure, is you have to look like him,
right,
or her, and you have to sound like them and move like them. Otherwise, if you don't have the audience in the first minute of a show like that, it's going to take a while to get them back.
But you've seen a lot of people do impersonations.
Oh, sure.
None of them say, "And here's my Albert Einstein."
Sure. That's so true.
They nailed it.
That's because people didn't do the research that I did.
Okay.
I did a lot of research in the beginning because I knew the look had to be right. So
right.
I found a woman at the Santa Fe Opera, Ann Davis, who she designed the makeup, and she also built from scratch the wig and mustache. When I have time, I grow my own mustache now that it's gray and white. It works pretty well. I knew that had to be right because the look had to be there. I had to resemble him. I'm not going to look exactly like him because I just don't have his features. but I'll resemble him. I researched his accent, which was took me a while because his accent is very thick.
It's kind of German-Swiss, isn't it?
It's very German, and he grew up in Bavaria, southern Germany, so his accent would be different than somebody who grew up in northern Germany. But his accent was more northern German when I listened to it, so I had to find out why, and I finally found out that it was more Prussian because he hung out in academic circles his entire life, and that's how he talked.
Yeah, there's several famous quotes by Albert mm-hmm. Einstein about his feelings towards music. Mm-hmm. That it, I get the impression that it was almost more important than science to his personal satisfaction.
Yeah, and that's what this show is about. It's about Einstein's relationship to music and how it was part of his life. He played violin since he was a small child. Chamber music is what he loved to play, and Mozart was his favorite. So the selections that we've chosen for this show are right in line with that. And he was famous for his thought experiments. He was not, you'd never see him with a lab coat on. I don't think I've ever seen a picture with him with a lab coat on. He was right. Not a lab. He didn't do experiments, although he had a number of patents to his name. But it was thought experiments. A lot of stuff came up through his imagination. And so music is a huge part of that, because music is always going to be in, somebody who loves music, it's always going to be in your head. And so I believe it's part of his, it doesn't say it influences his work, but somehow it helps.
Right. His well, work. It's interesting. People, I mean, I've spoken to a lot of people over the years, largely because I'm just nosy, but some of the jobs I've had, especially people who are not Native Americans. I don't mean mm-hmm. Pueblo, I mean aren't English WASPy. And for yourself, like Willie, you grew up in Bolivia. And so when did you come to America as a permanent resident? I should have submitted questions.
1969.
69, okay. So, more than 40 years ago.
Oh, yes.
English is not your native language.
No, and I didn't know any English when I came to this country, which was another adventure.
So now, 40 years later,
yeah.
When you dream, which language do you dream in?
English.
English.
Yes.
Okay.
You mentioned.
I find that unusual. Most people of our generation, even if they came here in their early 20s, still dream in their native language. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, people say, I see colors, or I see this. But the perceptions, how we take things in, is so totally different.
Sure, yeah.
If I was dreaming about my family or my country, I would go to Spanish.
Okay.
You know, if I was dreaming with my parents or anything like
that. Some childhood memory or something.
Exactly. Then it will go into Spanish. But regularly speaking, it will be English.
What do you think about when you're performing?
Is it about just the music? Okay. Hopefully.
I'll give you an example. I interviewed one particular musician who plays with no music. Mm-hmm. You know, long hour, 2 hour stuff. She says she just, the music, as you know, paints a picture. Mm. Everyone's telling a story. She sees that story, and that's how she performs, and she performs with her eyes closed. But you're looking at, like, reading a book or reading a script, that you're following that music, even though you've played it thousands and thousands of times and probably could play it from memory.
If I'm playing a solo, I agree that there is... You see, that's the beautiful thing about music, I think, and playing any kind of instrument. The moment that you play an instrument, that instrument has a breathing system. You know, that instrument has a heart.
Yes.
That instrument has dynamics. It has everything you could possibly express. It's another human aspect of the instrument.
Right.
When we're playing, I think you're exercising, in a way, all of those angles. You're participating in the sound quality. You're participating in the harmonic aspect of it, in the direction of the phrase. You know, you're participating in so many things at the same time. Now, add three other people to that, and you have a quartet. And now you are mingling with all of those emotions of three other people, and joining in one song.
So are you saying that you could take four conservatory trained musicians, say, all right, you guys are now a quartet, and that combination of four might not work?
Oh, indeed. Yes.
Someone they don't click.
Absolutely. Wow. Absolutely. There are technical aspects of it, certain technical facilities that a group might acquire when they practice every day, or might have it already when they begin to work together.
Can you interview if you happen to need a new member? Mm-hmm. Can you say, well, do you like strawberries? We all like strawberries. Mm-hmm. I mean, how can you interview someone, or can you, and find out if you think they're going to be a good match?
That's an interesting question.
It happens every now and then.
Yeah. And perhaps I don't know the answer to that. You know, until you sit down and you start playing your instrument, you don't really know what the direction of this combination is going to be. And sometimes it takes two, three. Sometimes it takes a month, 2 months to kind of click together.
So I can see that especially growing up with garage bands and everything. Mm. You know, that you're not really playing music off of a sheet. Mm. You're kind of, everyone has their impression of Hey Jude or something. Here, the music is pretty much set in stone. There's not a lot of leeway. So it's like, okay, Sally or Gertrude, can you play that cello part? It's not like, hey, you know, we need a bass player. Can you play? Yeah, I play bass.
Exactly.
And that, I would think that would be harder to find a good match, but you're telling me it's just as difficult in the precise world of classical music.
Oh, I think so. It's the chemistry of a group. You know, a group that breathes together, a group that has the same sensation of intonation, which is another aspect of it. We all hear things differently, you know, and A doesn't sound to all of us the same. But when you are in a group, and A should sound exactly the same. So having all of those combinations, I think, adds to a wonderful music making in a quartet. But when you have a little bit of disagreement of how you hear your intonation or how you feel your rhythm,
right,
then I guess you got to practice things like that. Now you're adding time to your practicing. Now you're adding so many aspects that are not natural for that.
And I think the audience would find that interesting because we're here at the Placidus Presbyterian Church and you have just gotten done practicing with the whole group for Sunday. And you have played here for 30 years. You all have done the Einstein Quartet many times.
No,
this is the first time. Okay,
I
withdraw that question.
Let me interject something here, if I could, about the quartet music, which I'm coming from the outside. I'm not a musician. I've never worked with a quartet before. I've seen them in concert, but working with the quartet, with Willie's quartet, the past several days, I'm hearing and seeing a lot of things that are very interesting. And when you talk about, yes, there are notes on a piece of paper, and yes, they're all looking at the same notes, but there may be differences in tempo. It's something that the quartet has had to stop and work out. Okay, what is the tempo? Because the tempo could be faster or slower. And so, but when they come up, okay, that's the tempo, and they start to play together, it's like one instrument. It sounds, you don't hear the individual. You hear a wall of sound, if I could use that phrase.
Certainly.
But you hear sound in a way, if you're watching, you can pick out the different instruments. But if you're listening, it all sounds like one person. And that's the magic moment for me. And for me, working with the quartet on stage, which I've never done before, and saying words, you know, I'm talking most of the time, I'm finding that my rhythm is really influenced by the quartet. Because there are moments in the music where, oh, I could use that. I could use that pause, that phrase. Here it's really dramatic. Man, that really makes me feel a certain way. There's a moment in the show where you'll see where they're playing a piece of Beethoven, and I'm not talking. And Einstein's opinion of Beethoven was he thought Beethoven was too personal. And having known that and then hearing the piece, I know what he's talking about now. It's very personal and very emotional music. and it makes me do stuff that I wouldn't normally do, that other pieces don't cause me to do.
Right.
And so I go, the first thing I do is I go right to my chalkboard, and I start hashing out some equations and getting frustrated because I know Beethoven is getting to me.
Right.
So that's a very interesting aspect about the quartet music and the choices that they've right. made in terms of music.
Well, let's throw some meat on those bones. And you're both in Albuquerque. Did you know each other prior to this relationship?
Yeah.
I mean, how was that marriage made?
Well, as I described earlier, we met about 15 years ago when Willie was, I was given his name. I needed to learn enough violin to play in the show, Einstein right. Stage Portrait. And so I took lessons from him for a number of months, and that's how we met.
And then who was the person that said that the stage play needed music and select that particular music? I mean, why it didn't become Grease or some kind of music like that?
Well, this is a totally original play that okay. we're doing on Sunday. The working title is Einstein's Violin.
Okay.
And so we've chosen the music. We had Willie came up with a bunch of choices, and then we played around with them when we first met and decided what was actually going to make the cut.
That's got to be a hard process.
It is.
Because you've got a lot of music to choose from.
But he has such a vast background in classical music that he really pinpointed some key music that he thought would work in the show.
Speaking of your great background, you have also conducted as well as performed.
Yes.
When you first, what made you want to conduct? Assuming it was your choice.
I was so interested since I was young. I guess that's a good question, but I got to go back now when I am 3 years old or 4 years old.
Okay.
And my mother takes me to most every rehearsal of the symphony. And the first person I would see is the conductor. You know, since I grew up pretty much listening to orchestras and watching conductors.
Yeah.
So for me, it was a natural step to want to try something like that. And I really enjoyed it. I did it for many years, for many, many years, and loved learning the scores, loved, you know, kind of putting my own tone to the music I was reading.
Well, give away some of the, I guess, inside baseball or whatever here. Mm. People who go to classical music concerts, whether it's a duet or a whole orchestra, I think they recognize that all the musicians are top drawer. And they all know the music, and they've all practiced it. So, what's this guy doing? It's like, does the horse need the jockey?
So that's interesting. I read somewhere that it takes 17 seconds for an orchestra to decide if the conductor who's in front of them, if they're going to follow the conductor.
Okay.
In front of them.
Just like an attack dog.
Conductor
no pressure there.
the conductor will follow the orchestra.
Right. You know?
But it is a very sensitive job, and I think you have Bernstein.
Yes.
Who is, I think, an amazing conductor, not only because he knows what is in four, or knows how to beat four or three, but the emotion, the discipline that he puts into every rehearsal, the care that he puts into every instrument of the orchestra, and balancing all the instruments of the orchestra, the way he can do that, I think he does it in such a simple way, in such a natural way. That's basically it, you know, is a conductor, that's what a conductor should do.
Right. But is that something the musician knows, or like, of the three tenors,
yeah.
I like Pavarotti. If someone gave me a DVD of solos of just one of the other two, I probably wouldn't listen as much, but if it was Pavarotti, I'd listen to it. As a member of the audience, and I look at the full orchestra and the conductor, I can go, that's a good conductor. Is there a way to know? Or is it just the musician who's going, he's doing a good job? Me, I just see some guy in tails.
Yeah. A conductor can influence a lot in orchestra. And I don't know what it has to do with the presence you know, I think it means something at the beginning. When a conductor is confident and knows the score, there is a certain amount of presence in there, and whatever he's going to speak about, how he's going to move her arms, means a lot to the orchestra.
Is it like a general where he'll keep his distance so that you don't get too involved?
Exactly right. Knowing how to influence the orchestra in a positive way, leave it there until there's the next challenge coming up.
Okay. And you don't date the first violinist.
Exactly. It's just, I think it's very... a conductor is a very fine-tuned machine.
Right.
He really knows, he has to know how to press, how to get out of the way.
See, I think the audience could probably relate to that more from professional dancers. We've all seen a lot of ballet movies or whatever, and the woman with the big cane who bangs on the floor, everybody knows that she's a terror, but she's doing that to get these exact movements out of these young ladies. I don't know if we've seen that in movies portrayed with a conductor. Yet it's that same kind of dominance that he is in charge, whether we realize it or not.
Oh, indeed. You can see the difference. I mean, I just mentioned Bernstein, but you can see the difference with Karajan, a guy that hardly moved much. I mean, he didn't seem to have that much the kind of energy and jumping energy that Bernstein does.
Right.
Totally in the opposite way. He is so calm, but his strength is in his calmness. Well, perhaps in Bernstein, his strength is in showing how everything goes up and how everything comes down, and what goes to the left and what goes to the right.
Yeah, some are very almost comatose, and others look like they're in a Zumba class.
Very much so. But I think the influence, the deep influence that they can achieve with an orchestra is magical.
And so this is the first time this Einstein's violin is going to be performed here at the Placidus Presbyterian Church, which is what we're broadcasting on, not on the church, on KUPR 99.9 FM in Placidus, and we've established that is the high desert. So too many hours of listening to Art Bell. He always said the high desert of Nevada, wherever. Pahrump, I think he was from. So these are all pieces that were selected specifically for this. Is it a, what do we call, narration or an oration or a speech or a play?
That's a good question. It's play.
It's with a play. Music.
Yeah. Okay, a play.
Yeah.
In your rehearsals, is the quartet playing these selections differently because it is behind the play?
Only in terms of dynamics. We're trying to calm down the dynamics so we don't cover the voice, you know, so we don't excite too much the atmosphere.
Right.
We're really kind of trying to be in the background as much as possible.
We're not going to make Tina Turner a backup singer again.
Exactly right. Exactly. That won't happen.
No.
But besides of that, I think we're pretty much doing what we would do.
Now, as the actor, the person performing the play, is it different for you with music or with this music versus how you've performed it in the past?
It's very different. Yeah, I've never performed with live music on stage. I'm not a person who does musicals, and having
respect you for that.
having a very good string quartet on stage with me is pretty intimidating. And at the first rehearsal, I just got shivers because it sounded so...
Well, whose idea was it? Who said, okay, let's do it?
I think Willie... the original idea was his way back when. And then we ran into each other at a concert he was performing. And we just started to talk about it again and said, let's do it. Let's put this together.
And so it kind of grew on you figuratively as opposed to you going, okay, I have to decide. Am I going to take this part or am I not going to take this part?
Oh yeah, that's the nice part about doing a one-person show is you cast yourself.
Right, and but you didn't have to cast it with the chamber music.
Pardon me?
You didn't have to cast it with the chamber music. That was a decision that I've been doing it this way for 10, 15 years.
Sure,
now, what am I doing? Why are we doing this?
Yeah, and we have to be very conscious of each other, the quartet and myself. And as I mentioned earlier, they're starting to influence my tempo and my rhythm, which I think is really interesting. I don't know how much of what I say they can hear because their instruments are right next to their ears. And if my what I'm doing is influencing them at all. But,
yes, it is. Was there ever a discussion of, with today's technology, you could all have earpieces so that you could hear?
True. That would be great.
But would that help?
Oh, indeed.
So
anything like that would.
But his words definitely will affect all of you.
Indeed. And we're trying to hear what he's saying, actually. We are very conscious that there is a word coming to us, and we're trying to kind of unite all of that. That's an interesting point. I think that how it changed, how the quartet has changed to do this particular show, is that awareness. Tom is here with us. Tom is part of the quartet. Right. Tom is it, you know?
But the reading of it, the synchronization, I would think, could be really difficult. It would be like singing Old Man River, but starting the lyrics two bars late.
Well, we discussed that. You know, one way you can do a play like this is you can time precisely when the music comes in and when it leaves and when I say my words and when I don't. And that would take a lot of synchronization and time to do that. So we decided to pick pieces of music that coincided with what I was talking about in terms of subject, but also in terms of time frame. And so we've matched what I've been talking about in terms of flow in that sense. And this is going to evolve. You know, this will be the premiere of the show, and we'll see how the audience reacts to it. I think I'm already learning things that I want to change in the future. But I think we're already booked in November, so this show is going to evolve.
And, so do you think professionally this will become like your major gig? Like
it'll be one, yeah. It'll be certainly
like Celine Dion in Las Vegas for 10 years?
Another tool in my bag of tricks, and we've talked about where's the market for something like this?
Right.
Certainly it's in this type of venue with the Placidus Art Series. But we had talked about talking to universities, to music departments, taking the show to a music department where Willie could go in and work with the quartet for a number of days, and then I come in and work with them in terms of the words and the structure of the show, and do it at universities in that way.
Is this an evolving art form? Does it have a name yet?
I don't know. What would you like to coin a name?
I will have to tell you Sunday after the performance.
Okay.
That's good.
I mean, certainly there's been classical music done with narration, and plays and so forth that have classical music.
Certainly. You know. Opera.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a little bit different.
And I'm very much aware of when I watch commercial.
Because I will not be singing in this show.
Spoiler alert. <That's right. laughs> Yeah, if you watch any popular program and take out their background music, it would change your entire perception of it.
Yeah.
Which is another thing about acting I don't understand. How you do that without all of the music and the horse galloping and the sword fighting, mm-hmm. and you're just speaking, sometimes just in a green room.
Yeah. It's not easy.
I would think, well, that's why so few people are as successful as yourself.
Yeah, and I've done enough television and film that, yeah, that's a really hard thing to do, because you don't know, that's all added in post-production, you don't know what it's going to sound like.
Even your laser sword doesn't have the light
that's
on
right.
it.
Yes.
So you're just there with the stick, you almost have to feel silly. So, November is the next performance. Of Einstein.
Penciled in, yes.
Okay. In Vienna or Uzbekistan or locally?
Somewhere in New Mexico.
Okay. And speaking of New Mexico, I don't believe I asked you, Willie. So you were in New Mexico. Why did you stay here? Because a lot of people, I'm sure, being more international, you'll say, oh, I live in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And they go, I don't know where that is.
Yes. We had a friend, my ex-wife and I. We had a friend who, excellent violist.
Mm-hmm.
At the time we were living in Calgary, Alberta. She calls and says, hey, we haven't seen in a long time, let's get together. She comes to Calgary for Christmas, and we play a lot of chamber music. She is extremely excited about it, comes back to Albuquerque, and finds an opportunity for us to play chamber music. And it was good pay, it was good situation.
Right.
And so we came to Albuquerque for that reason. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. But my ex-wife and I auditioned for the symphony.
Okay.
And we got into the orchestra, and we said, well, you know, next summer we got to go out and audition for other orchestras, other places. Meanwhile, we stay here, and a year goes by, and we just love it. 2 years goes by, we still love it, you know. And
you've got Albuquerque, and you have your professional life.
Exactly.
It doesn't get better.
My first son is born in Albuquerque, so now it's a family. We just loved it. In fact, we left Albuquerque or the United States for a couple of years. We went to Bolivia, we went to Costa Rica, right. Working in Costa Rica. And when it was time to come back to the United States, we thought, well, where should we go back? We could pick any place in the United States to come back to. And immediately, between the two of us, we said, Albuquerque, New Mexico. No doubt
Perfect.
About it. So,
and approximately how old were you at that point?
Well, when I had when I moved to Albuquerque.
The first time to Albuquerque.
Oh, God, those numbers.
Tell me about that.
Those things,
right? 30, 40, 20?
Oh, yeah, less than that. I okay. must have been 26, 27.
Okay. So you were an adult.
Yeah.
So what did you think of Albuquerque and New Mexico in this really odd obsession with green chili cheeseburgers, you know, coming from Bolivia, where food is very important?
Yes. You know, the first time I tried a green chili, I did not like it.
We'll cut that out.
I didn't find the taste in it. I could feel the heat, but I couldn't find the taste. 2 years goes by.
Yes.
Green chili and everything, red chili and everything. So now, of course, it's very much
better. I heard that after I'd been here for a while that if you put eggs on it, it's breakfast. So you can take all your chili.
Just
throw eggs on it, it's breakfast. It's a fascinating. I wonder if that contributes to the exciting music environment, that food, because food is so sensual, it's kind of in that same family.
Very much so.
And Tom, not to neglect you, but as a working actor, and I forget who I spoke to or heard an interview of, they were of the Hollywood type now, but they were from here. And they said, growing up, Albuquerque was not a place really for music or for, you know, acting TV mm-hmm. shows like it is now.
Sure.
Did you ever try the L.A. scene?
I did. I went there for, I lasted about 18 months, and was just starting to get work when I came back to Albuquerque. And I just did not like it. I did not like living there. The hustle was just not something that fed my artistic life. And so I came back, and I got an opportunity to join the union, Screen Actors Guild at the time, and I joined immediately. Because I wanted to be a professional actor. I wanted to make my living as an actor.
Right.
And in Albuquerque at that time, in the mid-90s and beyond, there was not a lot of money to be made here. We didn't have the film and television business that we do now. There was a lot of commercial work back then, which is what people made their living doing.
Hi, come buy my Chevrolet.
Yeah, and that's actually, commercial work is a very important part of an actor's career financially, because the residuals are so massive.
Right.
Or can be. But
well, I mean, if it's played in the market, it could be tens of thousands of times in a week.
Yeah, I mean, you don't get paid every time it plays, but you get paid every time it goes to a new market or
right.
Something or other. Can't find the word. Anyway, when the film incentives were passed here in New Mexico 12 or 13 years ago now, that started the building of what we've got going now. We have five or six television series being shot here, plus film. Commercial work is coming back, and so it's a good place for an actor to be. And I've gotten far more work here than I ever did in LA.
Well,
and I have the quality of life
yes.
in New Mexico that you don't have in LA.
And a great variety of craft beer.
Yes, there's that too. Yeah,
which is unusual.
And coffee now.
Yes.
And I'm from New Mexico. I was born in Los Alamos and grew up in Albuquerque. And I've lived in other places, lived in Seattle, lived in Denver.
Was your father one of the lab guys?
Yeah, my dad came out from the University of Chicago in 1950, and my parents never went back. So I was born in Los Alamos. He worked at the labs, and then when I was two, we moved down here. He worked at Sandia Labs the rest of his career.
So, and you're, we can consider you local.
I hope so.
Yes. I detect a bit of a Spanish accent. Is it?
No.
We'll just say that. You came with a land grant from Bolivia.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Well, you know, it's also interesting. We go on forever, but unfortunately we can't.
Right.
So I will remind everyone that this has been Conversations with Matthew Bronson. And we're talking about the upcoming concert on Sunday at the Placidus Artist Series at the Placidus Presbyterian Community Church.
Yes.
And if...
3 p.m.
3 p.m. But come early, because there's usually coffee and cookies that are very
good. And not only that, but beautiful show of paintings.
Yes. The PAS always takes the opportunity to highlight local artists. So
yes.
That we know are... We could do this every day and still not show everybody.
Indeed.
And if you have heard about the Placidus Artist Series but have not come, it's a big whopping $20 to see what I consider world-class performers.
Indeed.
And so for KUPR 99.9 and Matthew Bronson, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, William.
A pleasure.
Thank you, Tom.